This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at UH1.com.
Hi, this is Marion Bartoli.
I'm Mats Wilander.
This is Mary Carrillo.
I'm Stan Wawrinka.
I'm Leighton Hewitt.
I'm Andy Murray.
This is Yannick Noah, and you're listening to the Tennis Podcast.
Well, what do you know? It's 4:31 in the morning, and we've just had two more gargantuan Grand Slam semi-finals, one over the best of five sets, which was weird and not very wonderful, and one straight sets match, which was absolutely spellbinding and just had everything, really. I don't think I've seen a more dramatic thrill ride of a straight sets match. And what it's left us with is Alexander Zverev coming back from two sets to love down to beat Pablo Carreño Busta in five, and then Dominic Thiem squeezing past Daniil Medvedev in a couple of tie breaks to at least get something of an earlier night, which is not something that we're really used to doing. Matt Roberts. No Catherine tonight, folks. She's not able to join us tonight. However, we do have Mary Carrillo with us a little bit later in the show to look ahead to the women's final, which is going to be taking place tomorrow. How are we doing, Matt? You all right?
Yes, just thinking back to something Naomi Osaka said yesterday, which was, I don't really sleep during Grand Slams. And I'm relating to that very, very hard at the moment. I mean, it's only been, what is it, 8 months, 9 months since we had a Grand Slam. I feel like I've forgotten how they work. Like, this is quite normal, really, but it has hit me hard.
Yeah, I think we get hardened to it. But I think the other thing you have to bear in mind is it's the US Open and the Australian Open. That's the thing. For us, they're the all-nighters, aren't they? And they're the ones with night sessions. Whereas Wimbledon, we have a lovely time. You know, we're just sort of sitting there on Henman Hill with our pints and our picnic tables at about 7 p.m. And we're all done and dusted by 8. Crikey.
Yeah, it's a breeze, life really, isn't it? Yeah.
Sure is. Mary Carrillo coming up. And trust me, as always, every word of that is worth your time. Let's just go through these matches first, Matt. Zverev was embarrassing, in his words, for the first two sets. And he's chosen exactly the right word, because he played appallingly for the first two sets. And he was 5-1 down in the first at one stage. He was 5-love down in the second. And he did manage to get a couple of games, which were basically donations from Carreño Busta. He was struggling to find the court a lot of the time, was Zverev. He was double faulting. His forehand was going all over the place. I thought he might be ill. I was thinking, you know, he can't, a fully fit Alexander Zverev cannot be playing this badly in a Grand Slam semi-final. But lo and behold, he was.
Yeah, you know it's bad when the best possible scenario was that he was ill, and that was and that was the explanation for what he was producing. Because, I mean, you said at the top of the show it was a match played over the best of five sets. It was kind of redefining that, and it was almost the worst of five sets, wasn't it? I mean, those, as you said, those first two were really, really striking. I mean, we've known Zverev play not his best tennis in Grand Slam matches, but that's the worst I think I've ever seen him play. He was missing the court by significant margins. He was double faulting. His shoulders were slumping. And for such a confident man, he looked completely lost on the court in terms of what he was actually trying to do with the tennis ball and how he was trying to win a match. He seemed to have no plan whatsoever, whereas Krenia Busta is a guy who I think really understands his limitations on a court and knows how to get the best out of himself, and he was doing that for those first two sets. And to be honest, the scoreline was flattering Zverev. As you said, there were a couple of donations from Krenia Busta at the end of each set, and without those it could have been an awful lot worse. So quite how we went from that to Zverev for the first time in his career managing to mount a comeback from two sets to love down was pretty remarkable. However, I don't think his tennis reached the heights he would have liked it to reach. It certainly improved, mainly because it couldn't get a lot worse. But I think he was helped a lot by Krenia Busta, I think, getting pretty nervous, pretty tight, and certainly providing him with a path back into the match, which, credit to Zverev, he took, but it wasn't convincing at all.
To put it into perspective, Yevgeny Kafelnikov, former world number one, tweeted after the first two sets, "This is the worst US Open semi-final since Kafelnikov versus Hewitt in 2001, no. Which I thought was a rare moment of self-awareness from Yevgeny.
I don't know that match, David. Was it really bad?
Yeah. It was terrible. I mean, Yevgeny, I don't think he enjoyed it at all, as you can kind of tell there. But fair play to him. He's the one who calls it on himself. And he was absolutely right. I mean, those two sets, because Krenia Busta was playing okay, but it was just a race to the bottom in so many ways. Mm. I mean, when you consider what we'd had the night before, it was the opposite of the euphoric, uplifting feeling we were feeling the night before. This was just, oh dear, really? Is, you know, it's a Grand Slam semi-final. Have we got this? And I really worried for Zverev, because if he'd have lost that, if he'd have tail spun out of this tournament in straight sets, which he really like he was going to do, what sort of damage might that have done to him mentally? And actually, huge credit to him, therefore, for finding a way. You know, we give Andy Murray huge credit when he finds a way, and he did, didn't he? He was playing terribly in that match against Nishioka, and he found a way. And whilst this is the first time Zverev has come back from two sets to love down to win, he's now had 14 five-set victories in his career and only six defeats over the distance. And, I mean, look, half of that is him getting him into scrapes that he really shouldn't be in, but at least he digs himself out of a lot of them. So fair play. I mean, he obviously was racked with nerves. He admitted it. He said at 6-3, 5-love, "This is embarrassing. I've got to find a way to at least play." And I actually like that candor from him.
Yeah, as you said, he's very good at digging himself holes, but to his credit, he's even better at digging himself out of them. And he's had a lot of experience. We have seen this sort of thing from him before. And, you know, just the other day, Serena Williams said, "It's not how you start, it's how you finish." And ultimately, that is the most important thing. He got the job done, he won. But I don't know. I think if you only look at the result, you're kind of ignoring the layers and the context of the match. And as impressive as it was that he came through it, I'm still on the fence as to whether it was a positive experience for him in the way, because his tennis was so below the level I would expect from him, given the weapons that he has, that it's slightly concerning that he wasn't able to find his best game in that big match against an opponent who he was favoured against and could have crushed, to be honest, in three sets. I mean, because Krenia Busta, as you said, he played well, but once Zverev did dial it in a little bit more and steady himself, he was clearly the better player in that match. Just a perplexing match, really, and one that's quite difficult to kind of draw conclusions from, I think.
Yeah, I think he's playing considerably worse than he was in Australia, when had 75 to 80% first serves in, and he was serving, that was with an average of 126 mile an hour serves, and he was only hitting a couple of double faults a match. He would have been beaten tonight by Daniil Medvedev comfortably even though Medvedev lost in straight sets. That is how I feel, based on their respective performances tonight. Shows how well team ended up playing in order to get over the line against him. Just before we move on to that, though, I do think the other thing to say is that I think Karina Buster will feel gutted tonight. I know that we think of him as, oh, he'll be happy to reach the semifinals, but that's the second US semifinal that he's gone to set up in. This one he went two sets up in, the last one he lost to Anderson in four in 2017. And he really lost his game. And for somebody as solid as him, he made far too many unforced errors in those last three sets.
Absolutely. You would think that the last time he got to the US Open semi-final, as you said, a set up on Kevin Anderson, that at the time felt like probably his biggest chance ever to make a Grand Slam final. Well, he had an even better chance today. And yeah, his game collapsed. I mean, there's no two ways about it. He lost his steadiness, he lost his rhythm, he lost his confidence. And Catherine put it to Daniela and Tim Henman on Amazon Prime about whether they thought he would be in this position again. And they both praised him as a tennis player, but Tim Henman was making that point that this was probably his biggest opportunity lost, when you consider, you know, he obviously beat some good players in this tournament, but the draw did open up for him with Djokovic's default. And yeah, he will be rueing those missed opportunities, I think.
Catherine interviewed Dominic Thiem after Thiem's three-set victory over Daniil Medvedev, and he was talking about, both after the match on court and in this interview, about how he sort of how desperate he is to get this one under his belt, because he's already lost three finals, and this is the one, isn't it? I mean, two finals against Nadal on clay at the French Open, one on hard court in Australia against Djokovic. Those are just about as hard as it gets, really, in terms of trying to get over the hump. This one is the one he should win. Catherine has just texted to say, missing Kitzbühel might actually be worth it. for Thiem, he might accept that. Just to go over the match quickly, he won the first set comfortably, and really, after a sort of stunning start to the match from both players, it went very quickly in his direction, because Daniil Medvedev from US Open 2019 turned up for a few minutes.
How great was that?
It was the best. Just if you didn't see it, he argued over a decision by the chair umpire not to let him challenge for a Hawkeye overrule, for a Hawkeye challenge. And then Medvedev walked around the other side of the net to examine the mark, which you're not allowed to do at all. Wayne McHugh and the umpire, the referee, had a word with him on the side of the court. And Medvedev was saying, oh, I'm so sorry. I'm sorry. I killed someone, didn't I? I killed someone. That's why I got a warning.
You know what that level of sarcasm and kind of sass reminds me of now we've done more Tennis Relive? Martina Hingis. Couldn't you imagine Martina Hingis having that kind of sort of mini meltdown? And I thought he was going to lose it. I thought he was going to completely spiral out of control and the match might be over within an hour from there.
Well, he lost four games in 10 minutes after that, didn't he? And he was saying, I sincerely apologize to the USTA because, you know, obviously I've killed somebody. So I sincerely apologize to the USTA and the US Open. Please accept my apologies. So funny.
The joke of a US Open.
Is this a joke now? Is this a joke of a US Open? Is it? You just sit there.
Magnificent. Yes. I was really worried that we were just going to get corporate Medvedev from now on, based on all the social media posts that have been happening over the last 12 months and the general sanitization of him on the court for a little bit. But no, this was a reminder that he is still that guy.
It's in there, yeah. So, yeah, We don't need to worry about the memories and the metronomic winning the titles. There's the devil is still in there. Good on him. But what I was very impressed with him about is the way in sets 2 and 3, he put that behind him and just went to work. And some of the rallies, the exchanges between the two of them, I mean, really, it should not have been a straight sets match. Medvedev was up in both of those sets and he should have won at least one of them.
Yeah, I think you tweeted, David, that the quality of the match couldn't have been more different in a very positive way to the first one. Something I remember Daniela doing on the Prime coverage was literally having to find a new word to describe how bad the first semi-final was in English. You know, she speaks English incredibly fluently and well, Daniela, but she obviously didn't feel like any of the words she knew did it justice. So she came up with diabolical.
Fantastic.
And then for the second semi-final, I think she came up with mesmerizing, which was her new word.
Oh, great.
And I thought that described them very well. And as you said, Medvedev really was impressive in those second and third sets. He's such a problem solver on the court and he's such a thinker, and you can literally see him changing the way he's playing. He talked about this when he beat Rublev. He said the first few games he was feeling the match out and ended up playing the more aggressive tennis against Rublev and being the one trying to dictate the rallies, which he didn't expect because he felt that was his path to winning the match. And he started to do that a little bit more against team. He started coming forward a little bit and taking the ball earlier and trying to push team around. And it was so impressive the way he's got that chip to be able to figure that out mid-match. But it was a reminder of how good Dominic Thiem is as well. Not that we really needed it. He's really stepped it up in these last few matches. Ever since Djokovic went out, he's won 3 straight sets matches in a row. And I'm bowled over, really, by the way he has gradually improved his game on a hard court. You know, you go back 2 years, I think, and that was the US Open where he beat Kevin Anderson for the first time and pushed Nadal, and that was when he first started to make strides on a hard court. But you compare the player he is now, and he's so much more intelligent in terms of using what he has to suit a hard court. He massively upped his number of slice backhands today against Medvedev.
Yeah, they showed the divide on the Prime coverage between the number of slices versus topspin backhands he hit this year compared to last year. And it was about a 30% difference. And he was just digging into that slice. And it's reliable. It never misses. He just digs in. You can't hit a winner off it very easily. And then he sets up his backhand down the line with it, doesn't he? And you're just waiting for it. Which one's he going to go for? Which one's he going to pull the trigger on? Bang!
Yeah.
And you're like, whoa. It's just amazing.
Yeah. When he's playing his best, he's one of the best players to watch. He's got a thrilling technique and so much power and effort goes into every single stroke, especially when he unleashes on that backhand, as you said. And the slice was changing the rhythm of the rallies and not allowing Medvedev to hit winners and kind of, as you said, setting up his own shot. And just to compare the team that we used to see when he used to literally try and hit every ball for a winner on a hard court, it's a dramatic improvement, but done sort of subtly and gradually over the last couple of years. And now he is a complete player. He has now reached back-to-back hardcourt Grand Slam finals. He's reached finals of all the slams you would think he would have a chance of reaching the finals in. And now he's got his shot, as you said, playing a non-Big Three member for the first time. He now goes in to this final as the favourite. And that's a new position for him to adjust to. But he turns up in big matches, Dominic Thiem, and I expect him to on Sunday as well.
Yeah, so do I. So yeah, that match will take place on Sunday.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story.
In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Hello, Tennis Podcast listeners. David here. Now, you might know that I love a bit of cooking, and I think I'm quite good at it. But if I'm honest, even I get fed up trying to work out what to do every night. That's where Home Chef comes in. Being able to put together a delicious meal without the long prep and the cook times, well, that's pretty cool. Home Chef provides fresh ingredients and chef-designed recipes conveniently delivered to your doorstep to simplify your cooking experience. They have over 30 options a week and serve a variety of dietary needs, so you don't have to worry about what to make ahead of time. Not only is it convenient, but it's economical too. Home Chef customers save an average of $86 per month on groceries. Now, for a limited time, Home Chef is offering Tennis Podcast listeners 18 free meals plus free dessert for life and, of course, free shipping on your very first box. Go to homechef.com/tennis. That's homechef.com/tennis for 18 free meals and free dessert for life. You heard it right. First, though, we've got the women's final tomorrow. So let's say hello to Mary Carrillo.
Hello, David. Last night was one of the best nights of tennis I've ever personally experienced. I called the second match, the Serena Vega match, and I thought, oh boy, how is this thing going to beat the undercard? But they were both spectacular in their own ways. I mean, point for point, Jen Brady and Osaka, I was inspired and in awe of the way they played. And I got to sit in the stands for that one for much of the match. And it was, I don't know, I find tennis to be such an intimate sport anyway. So to see this staggeringly good brand of tennis in an almost empty arena amplified it for me. It just made it more astonishing that these two could produce such things internally, you know, bring it all out of themselves in that way. I love that match. I just loved it. And then after the 6-1 first set with Vika and Serena, I thought, oh, man, that's too bad. This is when we've been godding up, you know. we've been bigging this thing up, you know, ever since Vika got her way into the semis. And then that thing caught fire as well. It was remarkable. This has been a very special U.S. Open for me in a lot of important ways. But the fact that I got to be there last night to see that tennis is something I'll hang on to for a long while.
Let's just take them in turn. First, that first match and the setting, because you were in the stadium, you talk about the intimacy of it. That's the thing that I'm thinking about, is that it was just about them. There were no other factors.
Exactly right. That's exactly what it felt like. And it, the fact that those two women were able to, and of course, Naomi's been there. She's been on grand stages before and she's played grand tennis before. But for a lot of us, this iteration of Jen Brady has been a revelation, and that she was able to stay so poised and so composed and still bring all kinds of fire and live with Naomi for so long in that match was really something to see. It was terrific. You know, it brought me back to something that Naomi Osaka said of herself last year when she did not win the U.S. Open. She said, if I could believe in myself the way others believe in me, I think I would be very good. And that really stayed with me. And then it came back to me last night when I was watching her play that tennis, because now this year, with all that's happened to her on and off the court, she knows that she could be, that she does believe in herself and that she could be very good. Oh man, she was something, wasn't she? Apart from some disreputable looking tosses on her serve, the rest of her game was something, wasn't it? And when she does serve big, I don't know how well it comes across on TV, but once she gets her tosses right, the extension of her upper body, the leg drive, that when she serves like that, that ball stays hit. when Jen Brady was hitting her forehands, even some of her big backhands, those balls stay hit. I mean, the intention was so clear, you know. Oh, boy, that was a good match, wasn't it?
Do you think Brady is going to be able to make a thing of this? Because I was thinking back about 3 years ago to when Caroline Garcia had her fantastic run at the end of the year, and I thought that this is the start of something, not the climax of something. Mm. And I mean, maybe it still will be, but basically I was wrong. And this, I just wonder whether, when does a purple patch become a sustainable thing?
Oh, I think someone like Caroline Garcia, her game is more varied and complicated, you know? And I think a lot of her game depends on how focused she is on the day and how much confidence she's got in her shots. You know, you could tell that she wants to compete, but sometimes she just can't bring it. But Jen Brady is the quintessential big babe. Her game hangs on simple hooks, and it's very much power-based, hitting-based, and she has achieved a level of fitness that I think will sustain her. I mean, she knows what it takes to live with other big babes or other brands of tennis that she will be facing. And if you're quick enough to get yourself behind the ball to hit your shots that big, yeah, I think she's going to be around. She's, as we say here in Queens, David, she's the goods. She's the goods. And as we also say in Queens, she's probably going to win a lot of lettuce. I've loved being in Queens these last few weeks. I'm a chick from Queens. So
I was going to say, why are you enjoying it so much? I mean, you're in a deserted stadium. There's nobody around. You know, you've got partitions between you and your co-commentators. Why are you enjoying this so much?
I think I feel privileged to be here. I think that's it. I think all of us who are doing the broadcasting, we know how privileged we are to be seeing the 2020 U.S. Open in person. We're all aware of it. Those of us who can, like, we go down and watch the matches. We can sit just about anywhere we want. We can see the coaches. We can see their friends. You just feel privileged to be a part of something like this. And I have also felt safe throughout. So there's no fear. I had a lot of hesitations about the idea of coming here, but I have felt very safe. We all take great precautions. We're all very respectful of this environment. So I think that's why it's meant so much to me these couple of weeks.
The four players, it seemed to me last night, were all getting off on the fact that they were just able to go toe-to-toe like that. And they all seemed to be absolutely... I mean, I don't know whether Serena Williams will come off and think she enjoyed it, but it was so intense that it became, I think, fun for them as competitors.
Yes, I think... just to give a tip of my pointy hat to Serena... She won this thing for the first time about 20 years ago, David, and she comes in 20 years on and still is considered one of the favorites. Let's think about that for just a fraction of a moment.
Ridiculous, isn't it? And she was moving like a 19-year-old for about an hour.
Yes, yes. She moved well, and even when she doesn't play well, she competes so well. So, you know, you sort of have it in the back of your brain pan that she's going to figure out a way to win a tight one anyway. And she, even if she's not fit, you know, she had an Achilles issue, you kind of figure, like, I always get that sense with Serena that she's on the court and she's down a set or down a break and she kind of puts her hands on her hips and thinks to herself, wait a minute, there has got to be a way I can win this match. And then she goes about and tries to figure out a way to do that. But that's exactly what Victoria Azarenka did to Serena last night. I mean, after getting smithereened in that first set, that Vika continued to take herself seriously was really something to see, wasn't it? I've seen plenty of people just walk away from that moment. And instead, she just dug right into it.
And not least because Azarenka just has not been a factor for such a long time. I didn't think she had this in her at all 2 weeks ago.
I'm surprised as well, because she has not had the spark in her game that she's been able to show this fortnight. She just hasn't. She hasn't moved this well. She hasn't been this fit. She hasn't. And because she hasn't moved as well, she hasn't been able to hit as well. Her return game, I've always been so admiring of her return game. That thing is back. It's again the gosh, there was no one who played yesterday was at all booable. I mean, normally there's someone you think, boy, I'd really prefer them to win this match. I really want her to beat her. I really want him to beat him. There's no measure of booability at all in this women's semifinals. They all deserved it. They all earned their spot to be there. Any outcome I would have been okay with. And I'm not usually like that, you know? Normally I know what I want. I know what I want to see. I would have been happy if any of those four last night would end up holding up the trophy.
Yeah. No, I couldn't agree more. Just on Serena, do you think... she's played a lot of matches recently for her. She's played a lot of three-set matches, so she has tennis in the body. And I know she was saying last night that she's going to go to Paris and play the French Open. Do you think there is another level for her to find with whatever it might be, match play, confidence? Do you think, because she's now lost a lot of big matches on the big stages, and I just wonder whether there is another gear now?
I think that's the question. I mean, what is the continuing motivation for this woman? I mean, God knows she does not have to keep putting herself under that kind of stress and continuing to train for that long. And normally, David, I mean, this is the tournament after which Serena shuts down her year. Yeah. I mean, she doesn't play the fall. She doesn't like playing in Asia. Now she's supposed to, as of right this second, I think she's still entered in Rome next week. And she loves Italy. She loves Rome. It's where she met her husband. And then she's to play the French Open after that. And I mean, I'm going to assume Serena has gone months without practicing on clay. I mean, she, of all the active players, she's the one who's won Roland Garros the most. But yeah, you have to wonder again how she claims that she wants it, that she'll show up in Paris. But the fact that she can't even stay at her own apartment, which frankly sounds a lot safer to me than her staying in one of the designated hotels. There's two hotels that the FFT have designated for the players. There's not a bubble. There will be fans. I can understand Serena deciding, the hell with that, you know? So it going forward, can she find another gear? I think the gear she continues to need to find is motivational. But again, she used to, you know, her power, nobody could live with it. And now there's a bunch of players that she has inspired to that can live with her like that. You know, another thing, remember Osaka, she said she was asked, this was last year. She was asked, who inspires her? Do you remember her answer, David?
No.
She said, my mom, my sister, Serena, and Beyonce, in that order.
She's brilliant.
She really, it's so funny because I've always been a big fan of this kid. And she says things and you're thinking, wait, does she know how clever that is? Does she know how funny that is? Because when she says stuff, it seems like it's unintentional humor. But then you're thinking, no, I think she landed that one, you know?
Yeah.
Serena has not only inspired Osaka. I mean, look at Jen Brady's game. Look what she brings. Look what Vika has so often been able to bring against Serena in their matches. So Serena is now facing a brand of tennis that she pretty much designed. And now she's crowding 40. So it's going to be tough. It's going to be tough. I honestly, there was a part of me, as much as I was invigorated and energized by that match last night, when Serena walked off that court, and again, fanless, it was a weird way for her to walk off that court, you know? I went from being so happy for Vika to going right over, watching Venus. I'm watching Serena walk off that court to zero fanfare. I mean, the fans would have been 23,500 fans would have been giving her a standing ovation last night. And instead she just was this lonely figure walking through the tunnels of Ash Stadium into the locker room. It was, I don't know, it's hard. It's again, it's why I find this sport to be so spectacularly intimate, you know?
Mm. And it's, yeah, you're right. It has given us not a sight we want to see and a feeling we want to feel from point zero. But by virtue of the fact that we've had this situation, we are experiencing something that we would never have experienced before. It's like being invited into their backyards where they're just having their own pickup game of tennis.
That's exactly right. There's not this big, grandiose, you know, entrance. It's more like, yeah, just come on through the kitchen. and I happen to like that. And again, I think that's why you asked me why this has been so special for me. I think it's that. Mm. I think the fact that you can just easily go and watch them practice and watch, you know, little Leo, Vika's little boy. Yeah, and he's a happy little guy, you know, just see him goofing around on the, on this play area that the USGA has designed for the players and their kids. And to watch, you know, Serena's little Olympia just with her little mask on. I mean, when you think about it, you know, the visuals become striking sometimes. And you recognize what that there's a global pandemic and this is going on anyway. And I have to tell you, David, this is the anniversary of 9/11.
Yeah.
When the Twin Towers came down, and it is a solemn day here in New York. The bells are ringing, and every single network in New York, major network, is they're at the site downtown, close to where my apartment is, and they do this very solemn thing where they read the names of all those who were killed on 9/11.
Yeah.
Again, if you're from this town, from this city, and you're experiencing all these things at once, and you see that tennis continues. Tennis figured out a way to still play. It's moving. I'm telling you, I'm going to be tired after this one. You know, a lot's happened.
Yeah, no, you're right. It will stay with us. I agree with you. And the final that is to come features two players with so much going on with them, and also they just there were periods where, particularly with Azarenka, from when she started the comeback, it felt like she just went into the zone. Like she was in the zone for about an hour and a half. And we had the same with Osaka in spells, and mm-hmm. they couldn't be playing better, really.
I don't think so. I picked Osaka to win this tournament when it started, just because I think Naomi has a lot to prove, and she understands that the more she wins, the more she gets to wear the masks with the names of the victims of violence against people of color. I think it has given her even more purpose than just wanting to win tennis matches. She understands her personal power. So I'm picking Osaka to beat an inspired Vika, but again, I maintain I'm fine with Victoria Azarenka winning a major again. Yeah. You know, being in a major final again for the first time in 7 years. They are two tremendous hardcourt players. They really are. And this whole year has been hard, and and they're still saying, "Yeah, give me the balls. Let's." Let's go. Let's do this. Yeah.
And actually, the just as a final thought, it was a beautiful thing that Billie Jean King was on ESPN yesterday talking about the anniversary of the original nine and brimming with pride with what she was seeing on the court as well. And I imagine you felt something similar.
Yeah, of course. You know, Billie Jean's got her. Billie Jean, keep in mind that 5 decades ago, when the original nine women broke away from the pack and said, "This isn't fair, and we're going to start our own tour," I mean, this is the USTA, which back then was the US Lawn, LTA, Lawn Tennis Association, said they shut the door on these women. They said, well, guess what? You're never going to play any of our tournaments again. So here, that Billie Jean was able to somehow navigate through all of the cockamamie male politics of this sport for so long and continuing to fight the good fight. And that now this whole tennis center is named after her by the USTA. How the hell did she pull that off, David? How? And I've been fortunate enough to be a friend of Billie's for a long while. And over the decades that I've been in this game, I have needed her counsel time and again. And I've gotten frustrated and fed up and, you know, these people are pigs and whatever my problem was in that particular hour. And Billie would always say, you cannot walk away. You have to stay in the room. You can't leave the building and throw rocks at the window. And okay, I think I've tried doing that. I've tried doing that and with, I guess, mixed success, but yes, last night, the quality of tennis was so spectacular. The fact that the U.S. Open happened this year anyway, that is everything that Billie Jean King believes in. And yes, I was very, very happy and pleased for her.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's a lovely story. And the original nine and the story of, well, one of so many that Billie Jean King has been responsible for are stories we want to tell in depth on the tennis podcast in the future. Thanks very much for that little teaser because, you know, we're in awe of her, quite honestly.
Hey, David, I know I shared this on a WhatsApp group with you and Catherine and Matt last night, but I want to repeat this story to you again because it occurred to me during the watching of the semis last night. I told you the story about how Steffi Graf, when she was still at the height of her powers, was asked what her idea of a dream match would be. And Steffi gave it a think, and then she said, center court, Wimbledon, against Martina, with no fans, with no one in the stands. And when Martina was told that that's what Steffi's dream match would be, she said she'd be there in a heartbeat.
Oh, wow.
Isn't that cool?
It says everything, really, about...
It says everything about who she is, right?
Competitors, you know, at that level, that there's all the fame, there's all the money, there's all the hullabaloo, and yet actually, if you strip it down... champions just want to go at it and see what happens.
That's exactly right. The real champions are just looking at across the net saying and holding up the balls and saying, all right, these are good. These are good. Let's go.
And that's what Azarenka and Osaka are going to be doing tomorrow night. And actually, you know, I feel like, I don't know about you, but I feel like Osaka has found that within herself now. She's just got a love of – she loves the game. She loves competing. And I don't think she was sure whether she loved it enough to put up with all the other stuff a year ago.
No. And now look at her. She is a woman of uncommon skills on and off the court. Boy, it's been a hell of a thing to watch.
We got something good to look forward to tomorrow. Mary, thanks ever so much for your time. It's a pleasure as
always. Anytime, my friend. Anytime.
Do you know, Matt, every time we have Mary Carrillo on the show, I sort of think, well, it can't be as good as last time.
That's what logic tells you, isn't it?
And then it's better.
It always is.
Dear.
Oh, amazing.
The stories she tells and the turns of phrase, it's just a treat, really, to listen to. So thanks ever so much to Mary for coming on and sharing her thoughts. And I found it all quite moving, really. The way she spoke about the experience of this tournament, which is unlike anything we've ever had before. Hopefully it's unlike anything we have again, but that may not be the case. We'll have to wait and see. But it won't be forgotten. She's right about that. And that last story as well about Graf and Navratilova and just the raw essence of the athletes and the competitors. It's shown me something I don't think I knew before in that regard. The players they used to be before they were famous, almost.
Yeah, I mean, such rich insight from Mary about what it's like to be there, and just invaluable, really, something that we can't, you know, we can't portray because we're not there. And I think this whole year, to be honest, has made me really think about my own connection with tennis and what it is I like about the sport and why I think matches are thrilling and that kind of thing. And for a long, long time, I've thought that the connection between a player and a fan is right at the top of what makes tennis so compelling and enthralling. And I still do believe that. And I'm, as I said, I can't wait for the day that fans return. But I have learned something about the players, I think, in this period, the way they are still able to compete and produce such a high level of tennis in these empty stadiums, in these dead stadiums. They themselves are able to bring them alive. And I'm not sure I was expecting that. I thought the actual matches would be worse, I think, because of not having fans, but they haven't been. The actual tennis, with the exception of Alexander Zverev versus Paolo Carreño Busta, the actual tennis in this tournament at times has been as good as anything I've ever seen, really. Certainly those women's semifinals, as Mary described. And it really does tell you something about what motivates these players and just their competitive instincts. And having the stakes of a US Open is kind of enough.
Yeah, no, it is. So this women's final, what do you think is going to happen? Who are you picking?
I'm picking Naomi Osaka because I've picked her from the start, so I can't back down now. And I've not seen anything to suggest that she's not going to perform in this final. She's hitting the ball beautifully, moving incredibly well, and just generally looking like a Grand Slam champion. The problem is, you could say exactly the same about Victoria Azarenka, and I think it's going to be a little bit of fire meets fire in that final, and I'm already salivating at the prospects of these rallies, and I think we could be in for a classic, but I'm going to back Osaka still. I think she's just about got the higher gears.
Do you know, I think we're going to get a very similar match to what we've just seen between Medvedev and Thiem. I think it will be straight sets for Osaka, but I think it'll be two very tight sets, at least a thrilling feel to it. But we will see. It's all to come tomorrow. We've had some other storylines today. We had the women's doubles final with Vera Zvonareva and Laura Siegmund winning the title. Wonderful scenes in that match, because those two have been through a lot. Laura Siegmund's had all sorts of injuries over the years. Zvonareva's now 36. 10 years ago, she was in the singles final, and she's had a long time out because of injuries, and she also gave birth to her daughter in that time. And so it's really something to have seen her out there on the court giving a victory ceremony speech.
And it was 14 years since she last won the US Open women's doubles title. Extraordinary time span and everything she's been through in that time. Yeah, it was really special scenes.
Yeah, it was. And in the wheelchair events, Alfie Hewitt is into the final of both the singles and doubles. So tomorrow's action starts at 5 o'clock UK time, 12 local, with Alfie Hewitt and Gordon Reid against Nicholas Pfeiffer and Stefan Ude. The singles final in the women's event is Osaka against Azarenka. That's 9 o'clock UK time on the Arthur Ashe Stadium court, so 4 o'clock local time in New York. There's also the women's wheelchair singles final between Dida de Groot of the Netherlands and Yui Kamiji of Japan, and the final of the quad doubles, Dylan Alcott of Australia alongside Andy Lapthorne, the British player, up against Sam Schroeder of the Netherlands and David Wagner of the United States. So that's all coming your way tomorrow. Catherine will be back tomorrow on the podcast. we felt that she probably needed more than about 4 hours sleep tonight because she's got the biggest job of all of us. I talk on the radio. Matt's obviously working himself. I mean, we did actually finish at about 9 a.m. this morning, which was hilarious. And I did have a beer and then go and have my fry up and then go to bed. But yeah, we just thought, really, this is getting silly. Something's got to give. But and then we had Mary Carrillo. So what more do we need? Fantastic.
In a very weird Grand Slam, but there was one tradition we needed to maintain, and that was Mary Carrillo on the pod.
Correct. And that's what we've done. So we hope you've enjoyed it. Thanks very much for listening. Zeus, thank you for being our mascot, you wonderful dog. And do leave us an iTunes review if you've enjoyed the show over the last couple of weeks. And tell your friends about the show if you think that they might enjoy it as well. And we will be back with you again after the women's final tomorrow. See you then.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.